Imagine being charged with the murder of your boyfriend, and you are the prime suspect. What's going on, everybody? My name is RJ.
And I'm Layla.
And we're the hosts here at Haunting Mysteries, Inc., where we cover everything that is true crime.
If you're new here, every Thursday, RJ and I take turns covering a true crime case the other one hasn't heard of.
That way, y'all get our genuine reactions and concerns.
If you're interested in true crime, I highly suggest you subscribe, follow, etc. And if you're into our episodes, please leave us a review. It really helps out.
Let's get into it.
Let's do it.
Today's episode is about the murder of John O'Keefe and the trial of his girlfriend, Karen Reed. It's been over 2 years since John's passing, and his family and friends are still wondering who actually killed their loved one. John O'Keefe's family has described him as a loving man who stepped up to raise his niece and nephew after his sister and her husband died. Shortly after John's suspected murder, his family made a statement in the local media, quote, "People talk about someone who would give you the shirt off their back, but that was truly who John was, and it is heartbreaking for us to suddenly be talking about him in the past tense," end quote. During this episode, we challenge y'all to listen with an open mind, looking from the outside in, and determine for yourself what's true and what's not. In the morning hours of January 29th, 2022, a man's lifeless body was discovered in a snowstorm just outside a suburban home in Boston. The freshly fallen snow surrounding the man's body was now filled with shards of glass and large amounts of irregular spots and stains of blood. The man was a Boston police officer, and his name was John O'Keefe. Earlier that night, John and his girlfriend of 2 years, Karen Reed, went out drinking from bar to bar, or what's better known as a bar crawl or bar hopping. According to courtroom documents, the couple got into Karen's black Lexus SUV shortly after midnight and drove to an after party at a fellow Boston police officer's home on Fairview Road in Canton, Massachusetts. Roughly 6 hours later, someone spotted John's body covered in snow in the front yard of that home. Since that night, the events that occurred during those six mysterious hours has completely divided Canton, a town of approximately 24,000 people, about 15 miles southwest of Boston, Massachusetts. The residents of Canton and neighboring suburbs have spent months debating two possible scenarios. Was John beaten inside the house and thrown outside to die in the snow, or did his girlfriend Karen Reed kill him with her car? Local prosecutors have made their position clear, charging Karen Reed with second-degree murder, vehicular manslaughter while intoxicated, and leaving the scene of a collision. Karen has pleaded not guilty, and her pretrial hearings just finished this past Friday, April 12, 2024, and she's set to go on trial Tuesday, April 16, 2024. Do you know what the differences are between a hearing and a trial?
Yes.
What are they?
At a pretrial, you only cover certain parts of the case and in sections, and there's no jury, as opposed to the trial, you cover the whole entire shebang with the jury that then decides if you're guilty or not.
More or less, very, very correct. I'm going to go with the quote unquote correct definition, but she got that one. I'll give you that. A hearing is a formal proceeding where evidence is presented to a judge or other decision maker to determine a specific issue related to a case and is usually shorter and less formal than a trial. While a trial is a formal proceeding where evidence is presented to a judge and a jury to determine the guilt or innocence of a person accused of a crime or determining the outcome of a civil dispute.
In the words of Sean Spencer, nailed it!
Nailed it!
By the time this episode is recorded, Karen Reed's trial hasn't begun. So make sure to subscribe to our channel to get updates for this episode as well as episodes in the future. Now back to the divided town of Canton, Massachusetts. With a 2-year anniversary of John's death just passing this past January and all the attention surrounding Karen's trial, the debate over the case continues to tear this once tight-knit town apart. Locals have flooded the city council meetings demanding answers. Some have accused the local police of a cover-up to protect those at the party on Fairview Road, where the after party was held by a fellow police officer. Others have visited Facebook group pages and local blogs to discuss the details of that fateful night, which turned what was a local homicide case into a national conversation. At the very core of this controversy is a very specific question: Did John O'Keefe enter the house on Fairview Road that night? Again, the same house of the after party that's owned by a fellow police officer. The prosecution says no, but the defense says yes. Longtime Canton resident Jonathan Como goes on to try and clarify where the town and people stand. Quote, those who've heard of the case have pretty much picked a side. There is the she's guilty side and the there was a fight in that house side. There's pretty much no one on the fence, end quote. With the enormous amount of speculation of what happened that night of John O'Keefe's death, Karen Reed would have her turn to tell her side of the story. In courtroom documents and in media interviews, Karen, John's girlfriend, said that her and John went to two Canton bars that night. They mingled with friends and drank beers and vodka sodas before going to the home on Fairview Road. Karen said she dropped off John outside the house on Fairview Road, then returned to John's place because she wasn't feeling well, which would mean that, unlike stated earlier, she was not at the house party where John's deceased body would later be found. She called and texted John throughout the night, but John didn't respond. Then, court documents said that Karen woke up around 4:30 a.m., screaming when she realized John didn't come home. After, Karen called two female friends. One of the women was Jennifer McCabe. She had been drinking with Karen, John's girlfriend, that night. Court documents also said the three women got together and drove through the streets of Canton in near whiteout conditions looking for John and calling his name. A whiteout is a surface weather condition in a snow-covered area in which no objects cast a shadow. The horizon can't be seen, and only dark objects are noticeable.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it's like white.
Okay, so the only way you'd be able to see someone is if they're wearing like black on black on black.
I assume so. And I you know what? I wish I would have looked up if it's even legal to, you know,
drive during that time.
You know, if it's that bad?
Yeah.
How would it be legal? I wouldn't want to drive.
Yeah.
As the three women approached Fairview Road, Karen said she caught a glimpse of John lying on his back in the yard. Jennifer, Karen's friend, told authorities that Karen jumped out of the car in a panic and performed CPR on John, but he was unresponsive. Then the three women called 911. It was so dark outside that officers who responded to the scene said they needed to use a spotlight attached to a police cruiser to find the women, court documents said. Now, two things come to my mind after hearing that statement from the police. The first question I had was, can you have a whiteout at night? And the answer is yes. So that means not only would the women have a lack of visibility due to it being so dark outside, but they also had to deal with a whiteout at the same time. Which brings me to my second question. How could Karen spot John's body that's covered in snow from the car when it's dark outside, that the police officers needed a spotlight to find these three women while whiteout conditions are present? A medical examiner later determined that John suffered multiple skull fractures consistent with blunt force trauma that led to the bleeding in his brain. John also had two swollen eyes, several abrasions on his right arm, and blood around his nose and mouth. Hypothermia was a contributing factor in his death, the autopsy ruled. Karen, John's girlfriend, and her legal team, which includes attorney Alan Jackson and David Yannetti, have said she's being framed to protect the real killers. After a court hearing in September, Karen told reporters, quote, we know who did it. We know. And we know who spearheaded this cover-up. You all know. I tried to save his life. I tried to save his life at 6 in the morning. I was covered in his blood. I was the only one trying to save his life, end quote. Karen's attorney, Alan Jackson, told CNN that he believes John entered the Fairview Road house that night and got into an altercation with someone inside. Alan Jackson stated, quote, I think that a confrontation got physical and he was beaten to the point of unconsciousness. This was a cover-up. He was murdered inside that house and his body was placed outside, end quote. In Karen Reed's, John O'Keefe's girlfriend's charging documents, Brian Albert, the homeowner where John's body was found, and his wife told police that John and Karen joined their group at Waterfall Bar and Grill, the second bar they went to in Canton that night. The Alberts said they invited some people over from the bar to their house, but were not aware John and his girlfriend were coming over. The Alberts added they did not know either John or Karen that well, but wouldn't have minded if they came over to their house. The Alberts also told police they, quote, neither heard or saw anything outside of their home over the course of the morning, end quote. Karen's attorney, Alan Jackson, said that the Alberts owned a German Shepherd, which he believes is responsible for some of the bruises and marks found on John. Given the defense's position on the case, the prosecutors have a different view of what's important about what occurred on the night of John O'Keefe's death. Just to clarify real quick in the simplest way possible, the defense represents the defendant, and the prosecutor tries to prove the defendant guilty.
And the defendant is Karen Reed, the girlfriend who is being suspected of the second-degree murder.
Suspected, yep.
And the prosecutors are for the victim, who in this case would be John.
Correct, or the state.
Or the state.
Correct. The prosecution's view focuses on what happened outside the house on Fairview Road. They allege that John and Karen got into an argument that led to John getting out of the Lexus. The prosecutors say evidence suggests a drunken Karen Reed struck John O'Keefe with her vehicle as she made a three-point turn, leaving John to die in the frigid cold. Investigators said surveillance footage shows that between the two bars the couple went to that night, Karen appeared to consume at least 9 drinks. The third woman in the vehicle that morning told investigators that Karen appeared drunk when they were searching for John. Karen also mentioned that her SUV's right taillight was damaged and asked Jennifer McAbee, quote, could I have hit him? Did I hit him? End quote. Jennifer McAbee and the other woman in the car told investigators that as they neared the Fairview Road house where the party took place, Karen cried that she could see John's body lying in the yard, despite the near whiteout conditions and a cluster of trees obstructing their view. The two women told the police that neither of them could see John O'Keefe's body at that point. Karen Reed, John's girlfriend, then leaped from the car, ran to John, and began trying to do CPR, both the women said. And I say, isn't that crazy how that reaffirms my suspicion with Karen Reed being able to see John O'Keefe's body? Not even her friends in the car could see him. Again, that's just allegedly sus to me.
Yeah.
In case documents and in court, Karen Reed's attorneys have said they believe Jennifer McCabe, one of the women in the car, who's Brian Alberts, the man who owns the home where John's body was found, sister-in-law, is part of a cover-up to protect the people inside the house and frame Karen Reed, John's girlfriend, for the crime.
So the woman that was in the car with Karen, who was helping her look for John's body, is the sister-in-law to the man, the cop that owns the house where the party was being thrown, where they're stating that a fight, quote unquote, took place and that's what killed him.
Yeah. Or Karen Reed hitting her with, yeah, that's, yeah. Yep.
I just correct. Wanted to clarify that because there's a lot of names in here and everyone else might've been like totally on board. But sometimes names confuse me.
Yeah, no, go ahead and slow down too, because I know exactly what you're talking about. A forensic search of Jennifer McAbee's phone revealed a Google search for the phrase, quote, how long to die in cold. Hours before Karen Reed, John's girlfriend, called Jennifer looking for John, according to court documents. So it just goes back and forth about like what's going on. Prosecutors disputed the timing and the reason for the search, which is sus on their account because if the time shows in black and white in the phone's records directly from the cell phone company, how can someone forge that? And why is that an issue if they want everyone involved in this case to give them as much information about that night as possible? So far, both sides of this case are a little sus in my opinion. I just don't know. Jennifer McAbee, one of the women in the car that was looking for John, and Brian Albert's sister-in-law has not been charged with a crime. Jennifer's attorney, Kevin Riddington, told local media that allegations of Jennifer's involvement in a cover-up are baseless, meaning they aren't backed by evidence. Kevin Riddington, Jennifer's attorney, explained to the Sun Chronicle in April 2023 how he felt Jennifer McAbee was treated by the prosecutors, quote, she cooperated with the police, she answered all their questions, she testified before the grand jury, the next thing you know, she's getting smeared by the defense. Back at the scene of the crime, Canton police officers said that they searched the area by John's body and found pieces from a broken cocktail glass and patches of blood in the snow. State police later found pieces of a taillight at the scene that appeared similar to a broken right taillight on Karen's, John's girlfriend's vehicle, court documents said. In a video statement in August of 2023, Michael Morrissey, the Norfolk County District Attorney, said location data from John's phone showed he never entered the Fairview Road house where the party that Karen claimed to drop him off took place, which I find extremely odd because how can his phone show whether he entered the home? I get how John's phone can give information as to where he is, but I have a hard time believing that the location on his phone can be used to show whether he entered a location the same size as a home is.
I'm assuming they're going to have more advanced technology.
Well, of course, but it's like, so even their home's huge. It's a big home, but it's just hard for me to believe that they would know whether he crossed into, or, you know what I mean? Like it's just hard for me to believe.
I think that's a valid doubt to have, but it's also because we're lacking enough knowledge of what they actually have at their station.
True. Michael Morrissey, the Norfolk County District Attorney, would go on to state another reason as to why John O'Keefe never entered the Alberts' home. Quote, "Innuendo is not evidence. False narratives are not evidence. 11 people have given statements that they did not see John O'Keefe enter the home. 0 people have said that they saw him enter the home. 0. No one. There was no fight inside that home." Again, this is just me speculating here. This isn't factual, but can't anyone lie? Especially to save someone they love. Just because everyone who's on the same side, regardless of the amount, agrees on something, it doesn't mean that it's the truth. That's all I'm saying.
There's also the possibility, again, possibility, that the threat of it coming from a police officer or someone in the field being like, hey, if you tell the truth, then something bad's going to happen to you and your family, right, and we're going to cover it up.
Right.
You never know.
You never know. Michael Morrissey, the district attorney, has demanded a stop to the intimidation of witnesses in the case. He says that the allegations that a network of law enforcement agencies got together to frame Karen Reed, John's girlfriend, aren't possible. In August of last year's video statement, he quoted, "These people were not a part of a conspiracy, and certainly did not commit murder or any crime that night. They are not suspects in any crime. They are merely witnesses in the case. The idea that multiple police departments, EMTs, fire personnel, the medical examiner, and prosecuting agencies are joining in a vast conspiracy should be seen for what it is, completely contrary to the evidence and a desperate attempt to reassign guilt." Which again, I'm throwing out another opinion, but I don't think that it's too far-fetched or insane to believe that a network of agencies could have possibly got together to frame Karen Reed, because I believe that the government is so extremely powerful that they can make things that are real fake, and things that are fake real if they want to. I believe the government can do whatever it wants, and there's nothing we, regular civilians, can do about it. Having said that, in all the information I've found throughout this entire case, I haven't come across one article saying anything bad about Officer John O'Keefe. As far as I know, John is as much of the definition of what a man is to me. During John's wake at the Church of St. Francis of Assisi, in his hometown of Braintree, Massachusetts, thousands of people paid tribute to a man defined by his deeds and his life, rich with purpose as a parent and a 16-year veteran of the Boston Police Department. The next day, the funeral was held at the church, and John was buried at the Blue Hill Cemetery. During the service, John's brother Paul remembered his brother in a captivating eulogy which caused both laughter and tears. Paul, John's brother, spoke of their childhood, their closeness, and how John never left their sister Kristen's side during her battle with cancer. Paul praised his brother John for providing a home full of love for Kristen's children, Kayla and Patrick, John's niece and nephew, and concluded his eulogy for his brother with these chilling words, quote, "We'll take it from here," end quote. The very same words his brother John O'Keefe said when he eulogized his sister 9 years prior.
"He has a huge heart, like my family said, he would give you the shirt off his back. Just really amazing guy. Can only pray that my family gets the answers they need."
That's so sad.
It's so cute. It's so sad, but so beautiful at the same time. It's really sad. Now, to sum up the closing of this episode, here are some of the current events and bullet points of the pretrial hearings so y'all can be caught up with this entire puzzling case to try to figure out who murdered Officer John O'Keefe. First things first, I wanted to mention that while watching the coverage for Karen Reed's pretrial hearings, I was absolutely disgusted with how people were behaving outside the courthouse. dancing and dressing up as if they're at a party turning up while protesting that Karen Reed is innocent.
What do you mean by dressing up?
Like they were like wearing costumes. Like I saw like one girl, like as like there's like one guy and girl was like
cosplay.
Not really, basically one girl and guy, like they stick out vividly was like Jasmine and Aladdin. Mm. And they're like all like dancing and like all happy and stuff. So I have no issues with people protesting for things they believe in or are against, but there needs to be a certain level of respect throughout the crowds, especially when it involves someone's loved one being murdered. Inside the courtroom during the final pretrial hearing for Karen Reed, the defense focused on presenting a third-party culprit defense, arguing that someone else murdered John O'Keefe. However, Judge Beverly Canone rejected the validity of the defense's arguments based on the qualifications required for such a defense to be admissible in court. The defense insisted they would continue pursuing the third-party defense and address its credibility later. Additionally, the defense requested that DNA evidence found on Karen Reed's car be excluded from the trial due to delays in testing caused by procedural issues between the defense and the prosecutors. They argued that the delay was not their fault and that the evidence should be excluded to allow them adequate time to prepare. The prosecutors countered that by the time the evidence would be presented in court, the defense would have sufficient time to assess it properly. Furthermore, the defense sought to exclude evidence related to events in Aruba and voicemails left by Karen on John's phone, arguing that they were exaggerated and aimed at tarnishing Karen's character. For those that don't know, they went to Aruba and supposedly she, you know, cheated on him there.
Okay.
While they were on vacation on New Year's. So that's where that's coming from. The prosecutors contended that this evidence was crucial to establishing motive and the nature of John and Karen's relationship. The defense also challenged the reliability of the blood test results taken from Karen at the hospital, which showed a wide range of alcohol levels. The prosecutor defended the results, stating that the range accounted for various factors affecting accuracy. So basically, they gave a big difference between what it could have possibly been at the time of the supposed hit. Moreover, the defense objected to the presentation of video evidence showing Karen in custody, claiming she was unlawfully arrested twice. They argued that the environment at the police station could prejudice the jury. The prosecution countered by stating that certain information, particularly from the FBI or district attorney investigations, should not be mentioned in court if it's not specified towards any individual or group.
That's fair.
Yeah. In conclusion, the defense reiterated the validity of their third-party culprit defense based on expert opinions and argued for the admission of evidence related to potential alternate suspects. The hearing concluded with discussions about the activation of a camera at the carport where Karen's car was parked, which was kind of funny because the defense was like, it's, you know, it's motion activated. And he's like, well, the car can't teleport there. So if it drove up, it like should have caught it by the motion. They were going back and forth a lot. It was kind of interesting to see them battle it out. So
the defense and the prosecutors.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting because both of the ways that they were cutting it, it was like, oh, I could see that. And it's like, man, if you're a judge, like, how do you decipher what's true? Because these people, someone's telling the truth, right? Or a version of the truth. And then someone's like lying to a certain degree, right? And they're so good. Like, how are you able to differentiate the truth from lies?
Well, I think that's where the trial comes into play. Because yeah. That is when you get the evidence and you're able to bring on witnesses and you're able to have professionals, like people who do like the forensics and what they saw and like blood splatter patterns, etc. Mm-hmm. So that's when everyone kind of comes into play. True. And I think that is what ends up making the final decision of who you believe in, right? Because that's you true. Have to kind of make a decision on what evidence points to what direction.
Yeah, because like I'm a rookie right now and I've never really paid attention to hearings before as close as I have this one. And it's really interesting because at this point it's all like hearsay because they're just bringing the attention to each other's side about what they possibly have as evidence. And it's not proven yet. It's just letting the other one be aware of it. So then they both can be ready to defend it or argue it or whatever. And I'm like, man, I never knew that. As of right now of this recording, the pre-trials are over. Okay. And the trial is supposed to be coming up this week. But by the time that this episode comes out, the trial should have already happened, but they might postpone it again.
Well, keep tabs on it. And then we can start uploading some of you covering the new, like the trial, if it goes through, when it's going to happen. on the YouTube shorts.
Yeah, the shorts. So pay attention to that, guys.
If you're listening to an audio, make sure you're following us on YouTube, where we put the video format of the podcast. And you will see on our short section, RJ will start covering that for y'all so you can be up to date with everything. So real quick, I have a few thoughts, not a lot, because you kind of, anything that I thought of things and then you pointed them out.
See what happens when you listen?
For real though. Yeah. You're like pro the theory that it was the cops, aren't you?
If I had to choose, like if I had to, I would say, yeah. I would say it's inside for me personally. Yeah.
But then how would you argue the aspect of her knowing exactly where the body was?
See, like luck or like something poking out of the, like, I have no idea. Like that's the only thing that confuses me about her statement. Whereas there's a lot of other things where it's like what happened to him, like what the autopsy said, it doesn't make sense that he got hit by a car at a taillight when and all these things happened to him. I don't see that being the case. I don't
see, this is why it's so conflicting for me. Cause I guess I just thought about it as well. Technically, if the cops are working against her, they could have purposely made the statement that they had to use lights so bright to go against her statement. And then the woman that is related to the guy also, and they could be friends with the other woman who then stated that, well, you know, we didn't see a body.
And again, I don't know if this is true, but I read this. I remember this now. The townspeople were actually afraid of that family because of like how well connected they were. And again, I don't know if that's true or not, but I read that that's how well connected this family was.
Okay,
or
well, is. I wish you would have mentioned that earlier. I didn't understand that they had any. I thought it was just like a regular cop family.
The house that they live in is like $1 million.
Yeah, but you didn't state any of that.
I got to keep something up my sleeve.
So, wow. For the people who probably dropped off in the middle of this episode, now they have no idea. So then
fake fans.
When you state it like that, that makes more sense. And then I'll definitely back you up on that theory. But when you are, you're not describing them enough for me to understand with full context how powerful they actually are. So to me, you stating that the government's powerful, I'm like thinking to myself, okay, but this is just like a small town. Like with a police officer.
Like you're basically, so like, it's like a rookie cop or something.
Yeah. That's like, I'm just thinking it's like a regular police officer. I didn't know he was like a police officer so high up there that he has $1 million home and then he has connections and that people are scared of them.
What's wild though too, is that after all, like that, all the stuff that I looked into, I never got to see what his rank was. I'm really curious if y'all know what his rank was.
That'll probably show up on the trial. Actually it might not. But unless they get put into the trial and there's evidence that they were responsible for this, who knows? Next one is, I do find it extremely odd that the text message, I'm sorry, that the search history for Jessica, I believe her name is, was how long does it take for someone to die in the cold or in the snow? And it was way before she got any phone call from, what's her name?
Karen. Yeah. What also is crazy too, the phone records said that they like called each other too. Like, so not only did she search that, but then they were like calling each other like, and trying to like, the defense made it seem like they were trying to triangulate like a plan and like a story.
Almost as if Karen genuinely was looking for her husband. And that is when Jessica was like, hey, this is the perfect alibi. Like, we'll blame it on her.
Yeah, because like again, whatever her blood alcohol was, they were trying to figure out hours earlier what it would be once it was diluted for a certain period of time, and it was 1.13 to 1.29 or something like that. So it was, she would have been intoxicated heavily, depending on that. So maybe they were trying to use that as like, oh, she was so intoxicated she didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, I don't think that's fair to. I'm actually going to say, I don't think that's fair to include on that part because a lot of the people in the jury, depending on how they're able to sway them, they're not going to pay attention to the range. They're going to pay attention to what sticks in their head the most. Mm-hmm. And that could definitely manipulate how this trial goes.
Oh, yeah.
I think the last one that I had was there any evidence that Brian had any bruising on their knuckles or anything like that? Or is that evidence that they might be keeping to themselves until the trial goes live?
Yeah, I don't remember them stating anything about the injuries that they sustained, if they had any at all.
Okay.
I don't remember that even being a thing.
Okay, so I guess we're going to have to wait and see about the trial and what happens. If you want updates on this case as it progresses, make sure you're following us on YouTube at Haunting Mysteries, Inc., where RJ is going to be uploading the updates on YouTube Shorts. If you're an audio listener and you already didn't know this, every episode we upload onto the podcast platforms we have on YouTube, but you get to see me and RJ interact, have the conversations we're having, you get to see our faces, as well as the images and videos of everything that we're discussing.
Yeah, and Layla really does a good job with all the editing. She really puts her heart and soul into it. So you guys are not going to want to miss that. As well as next week, next Thursday, is going to be Layla's turn to have the episode running. So you're not going to miss that, I promise. It's going to be a great one.
Yeah, so don't forget to like, subscribe, comment, share. Tell a friend, one friend. I'm sure you have a friend. I have one friend. So tell a friend and review, please, because we're begging for it at this point. And we will see y'all next Thursday.
Peace.
Bye.